Simon, Sani, Vav, Dover Charis. Dover Charis, we're going to talk about right now, is we've been referencing this almost every year. We've been talking about how we're going to get to Dover Charis. It's one of the most complicated and also, unfortunately, one of the most common questions that come up in kitchens and dorm rooms across the world. Ravenash said, and he heard this from Ravil directly, where Ravenash said that Rav Willig had told him that a rabbi needs two things on his desk. A community rabbi needs two things on his desk, only two. Number one is a phone. I guess that's in his pocket. And Rav Willig has a smartphone, by the way, if anybody was thinking about that. Well, he got a smartphone, he can WhatsApp, it's pretty cool. So number one is a phone, and number two is a very specific sefer called Hilchos Sakin B'Davar Charis. Those are the two things that rabbi needs on his desk at all times, because those are the questions that he's going to be getting questions all the time, specifically in the areas of Hilchos Sakin B'Davar Charis. That sefer specifically is huge. I think Rav Benner says like 400 pages or something, all about Sakin B'Davar Charis. There's a lot to talk about. So we're going to do our best. We're not going to be covering nearly 400 pages of material. We're going to try to give the background like we do each time and talk about some of the practical applications, some of the questions which may come up and how we would deal with them. Everybody's encouraged, like always, everyone's encouraged to call up a rabbi, a posek, whenever these types of questions come up. But the goal of this year is that you're kind of familiar with what's a question, what's not a question, and what types of things should you be mentioning when you're talking this over with your rabbi, with your posek. I had a situation one time last year where we were dealing, I think it was probably this year, or we had just finished Dover Charis, and somehow, I don't remember exactly what the question was, but like I cut an onion with, let's say, a meat knife, then put it in the dairy pot, making soup with a lot of vegetables, and like the pot was aimed at Yomo, but the knife was bent Yomo, like every single possible fact that you could possibly have in a bus with a follow-up question, I had somehow like gotten into head questions. So I called up with Ben Arsh and said, like, this is not a text. This is like a whole conversation. And he said, Taka, it's one of the best questions I have. It's one of the best questions I've heard in a long time. Maybe I'll build it into one of the smicha tests. Because like it was really comprehensive, covering like all these different areas. It was pretty cool. And we spoke out the situation. So a lot of things can come together in the Dover Charis Shaila. We're going to try to get the background. So the source of the idea of Dover Charis being a problem, we also have a nice controversy, very, very recent, hot off the presses, about like a week or two old, that we're going to get to in the middle, also very exciting. Okay, so the source of Dover Charis comes from the same Gemara as Not Bar Not, we spoke about 2 weeks ago. If you remember, Not Bar Not was Kufyat Aleph on the Bays in Hulin, says, Dagim Sha'alu Bika'ara, right? Fish that come out of a parved pot into a meat pan. The thought there was, since that's Not Bar Not, it's two steps removed from the actual meat itself, that could be eaten with kutah, that could be eaten with this milchish Babylonian dip. The Gemara continues, a radish, known, which is cut with a meat knife, cannot be eaten with kutah, the same Babylonian milky dip. So a radish cut with a meat knife cannot be eaten with kutah. So why not? Sorry, the Gemara continues, this is true for a radish, but a kishos, cucumber, a zucchini or something, let's say a non-charif vegetable, you can just scrape the cut sections, obviously now it's the same knife, you can scrape the cut sections and then you would be allowed to eat that cucumber with kutah. That's the Gemara. So what is going on? What is the problem when I cut a sinon, when I cut a radish with a meat knife? Why can I no longer eat that radish? Why can I no longer dip it in this milky dip? What's the problem? Any possible svaras? What might be happening when you cut the radish with a knife, which is going to lead to making that radish flaccid? Well, yeah. So what do we think happens specifically with the radish? When I cut the radish with a meat knife, that made the radish flaccid. Well, somehow if I'm cutting a normal cucumber, it doesn't make the cucumber flaccid. I just need to wash it off or scrape it down, and then I'm fine. What do you say? Left in the knife. What do you mean?
The knife cut off the meat.
Oh, very nice. So Rashi has two chapters. Rashi is two chapters. Number one, the second one that he says is that we're dealing with a ben yomo meat knife. This knife has been used with hot food straight out of the oven, right out of the pot, within 24 hours. And somehow this radish is so spicy, so harif, that it's able to pull the taste out of the knife, even though normally we say not bar not, it shouldn't be a problem, especially by Dover Harith, it creates issues and now it's considered inflation. That's Rashi's second shot. Rashi's first shot is that there's a difference between knives and all other tatum, all other utensils. It's very difficult, even nowadays. It's hard to clean a knife. You take out your sponge, and you see like those sharp serrations on the blade. You don't want to slice up your sponge when you're trying to clean the knife, so you'll do it from the back side, you'll hold it gently. It is pretty difficult to get a knife really clean. Maybe that's the difference. I'm using a meat knife which probably still has shamnunit, still has schmutzik on the blade, and that schmutzik is getting less on the radish because the radish is a little bit spicier, that's getting absorbed into the food itself as opposed to being left on the surface.
But then with that story also cutting cucumbers.
As opposed to being left on the surface. By a cucumber, that same shamunus is there, but you can just scrape it off. You can scrape it off the top using another hard surface, another something sharp or something to scrape off the edge. However, what's unique about a double fire, you've got to get absorbed, the taste then gets pulled in to the vegetable itself, to the thing itself. That would be the difference. Okay? So two pshat and rashi, that's going to be significant down the line, especially once we get to our controversial statement. Okay? So normally we spoke about 2 weeks ago, taste can only transfer when there's heat plus a liquid medium. Right, that's why we were dealing with pot cooking, frying, maybe you have some liquid there also. Something which is totally dry does have a little bit of a different set of rules. Here, the pressure of the knife, I'm cutting on a cutting board, we're not dealing with anything hot. The radish is cold, we're not dealing with heat, but the pressure of the knife replaces the heat. A cold onion cut with a meat knife will make the onion inflation. Okay? This harifus, right, harifus plus the dofak asakin, the harifus plus the pressure of the knife cutting down is able to replace the heat and the liquid medium, and that's going to cause problems. Okay, so an important question we need to ask is we understand that the tanon absorbs taste. We understand that this radish is now in some way flaccid. The question is the entire radish flaccid? Does the taste somehow get shot through the entire radish and now my whole tanon, my onion, whatever it is, these are all flaccid, the entire thing is flaccid? Or is it possible that only a small amount of taste is absorbed, but I can somehow cut that off, I can somehow get rid of that piece, and the rest of the radish, the rest of the onion, will be left as part? Which would be very helpful, which would definitely come in handy. Just before we get into that, a couple of other foods that we want to talk about double fire. What exactly are we talking about? So Rav Melamed in the new Hilchos Kashrus Bet paper, which just came out, fantastic, very exciting. So he says a very nice thing, like a nice cloud. It's just, and you can't fully rely on this, but just a nice kind of one-line summary of what is usually considered a double fire. It's foods which you normally wouldn't just like reach into the fridge and take a bite out of. The famous Seinfeld episode where George loses his glasses or something and he loses his glasses and he's trying to prove that he can still see, he can still really like know what's going on. He reaches into the fridge and he pulls out what he thinks is an apple and takes a huge bite. And I think it's Jerry's like, you know, that's an onion. He's like, yeah, I know it's an onion, and he doesn't want to let on that he has no idea what's going on, that he didn't see that it was an onion, he thought it was an apple, and continues eating this onion as he cries away. I also have a story with a friend of mine, if anybody knows a D.C. My wife and I did NCSY in Albany for a bunch of years. So there's one year, I think right after we had Avraham or something, we weren't able to go up to Pasora, so a D senior, a couple of other other guys, Benji Lehman, went up, Benji was involved, but he brought up a D to help run some Pasora, make it exciting, whatever it was. So right before dancing for Pasora night, they had like a pump up, like get the NCSY friends together, and like, wow, we're going to dance, it's going to be awesome, it's going to be so much fun. So like, what do you do on an NCSY pump up to get kids excited? So a D, being a D, is a very unique character, an awesome, awesome guy. He starts giving all the speech and like, yeah, we're going to dance, it's going to be incredible. In the middle, he pulls out an onion. I don't know if he somehow connected the onion to the story, some sort of a muscle, whatever, but he pulls out an onion. And then he takes a bite of the onion. And everyone's like, what are you doing? Oh my God, oh! And he's like, still giving a speech, and then tears start streaming down his face because he's literally eating a raw onion. And he's taking another bite, and he's getting more fired up, and everybody else is freaking out, like, what is going on? And he gets to the big climax of the speech. He takes the onion, takes one more bite, and spikes it on the ground! And everybody goes wild! That was literally the best pump up they've ever had since I started dancing. So once in a while, you might eat an onion raw. The opportunity may present itself. But normally, you're not going to do that. So foods which are not usually eaten raw would include onion, ginger. Radish is a little bit interesting that it got on the list.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a little bit interesting. You also like have like small pieces of onions that get into salad, so we're presumably talking about something you wouldn't take like a good bite out of, like a good chunk. Some other things, pickles make the list.
There are some things that are not fit to eat raw.
Like what?
Like for example, someone take a bite out of
hot
raw zucchini.
Oh no, that's not what we're talking about. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about you wouldn't eat that because they're too sharp.
Pickles, that's true.
They're on the list. They're at the list. I don't know why, but they're on the list. That's why I said you can't totally rely on the file. But it's a nice way to summarize the idea. Just a couple more. Herring. Herring is discussed as being on the list. Well salted, very sharp olives make the list. Those kind of depend on how salty they are. So this is more towards the end of the spectrum, the more extreme side. So a lot of things make the cut. Citrus fruit we're going to talk about. Surprising one, the citrus fruit lechumra, we say would be counted as a better part, except for Hesed. We'll talk about that, but at least the B-car does make the list. But generally you're going to be dealing with like onions, radishes, ginger, and things like that. First day countryman.
So it's just things that you wouldn't eat raw, not like
water.
You're
not eating raw because of the spiciness, because of the chalitzas. But just because something is not edible raw doesn't mean to call it chalitzas. Again, that's just like a kind of overarching cloud. You can't just assume things based on that. You kind of have to know what usually makes the list.
Is it kind of like in terms of like pH,
something's
like 7, 10, 14? Sure. Is it
based on that?
No.
I wish we had something which was like so well defined, but I don't think we do. Vinegar can often would make the list. Hot pepper would make the list. If you have like salad which is soaking in vinegar, and then you cut it with a knife, that would have the rules of double cut. Alright, that makes sense. Vinegar, so you soak like a salad in vinegar, usually a bunch of salad dressings, that could qualify for double cut. Things to be aware of. You can call up your rabbi, you can let me know. Yeah. This is for full-fledged meat. Yeah, full-fledged meat. So what, like we said, when you cut this radish becomes, we consider this radish as if it was cooked in a pot together with meat.
Wait, the whole thing?
Oh, so let's talk about that. Thank you. We're going to talk about that right now, yeah. Okay, so how much of this radish, how much of this Dabar Chayav really absorbs the taste? So we have a three-way machlokas in the Rishonim, which is basically, I think, about as many sheikhs as we can possibly have. Sheikh number one of the Rush says, today klipa. Klipa really just sounds like a tiny, tiny amount, a little shell. Basically, practically what that means is you would cut off the smallest amount that you could cut off, and that means you've taken care of the problem.
This is an other thing, not
this is Dabar Chayav. This is Dabar Chayav. If you cut a knife with Dabar Chayav, the Rush says, the only thing that got affected was a klipa. Instead of just scraping the edge, you need to cut off a tiny little piece, and then you're okay. The Ravid says today nitila, which is a finger width, basically the width of your thumb, which is about 2 centimeters. You would cut off about 2 centimeters from either side of the cut, and then the rest of the vegetable, the rest of the radish is totally fine, the rest of your onion is good to go, it's still fire. The Ravid. First was the Rush, then was the Ravid, and third was the Rashba. Funny, the Rashba wrote stay for an half, 2 sparim, he wrote the Torah Sabayas HaAruch and the Torah Sabayas HaKasser. The Torah Sabayas HaAruch is where he goes through like all the different chitos and discusses at length a bunch of different Basra B'chol HaSugyas, and then the Torah Sabayas HaKasser is the summary version. So you can often try to play them against each other and try to see what was he thinking when he was going through the full sugya, and then how did he decide to quantify that when he was giving the summary. Obviously we know from learning things like the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you'll often walk out with more of a chumrah if you're just seeing the Kitzur, because you can't give many details, you can't give a broader range of what's going on, but it is interesting to see when he changes the shita between the first and the second. So in the source of Ayat Aruch, he says, the Ravid says Kedei Nitila, and if I wasn't like scared of the godless of the Ravid, if I wasn't too nervous to argue with him, I personally would have said Kula, the entire thing becomes Kulashim. So if I just had that, what would I think the Rashba's stock was? I would think he decided to defer it to the Ravid, and he would agree Kedei Nitila. Then you open up the source of Ayat Aruch, and he says, what's the stock? Kula, the entire thing becomes Kulashim. So generally we assume this is the way it's brought down in the Beit Yosef, commenting on the Torah. We generally assume the Rash beholds kulo, the entire vegetable, the entire double harvest, specifically, what is going to become inflation when covered with inflation next. So how do we pass them? We have these three shittos, Rush, Rashba, Rush, Rashba, and Rashba. How do we practically pass them? Machaber and Ruma. The Machaber says, the stock is in the middle, take a little path, we pass them like the Ravid, today the Tila. So if a Sephardi accidentally cuts, let's say, a flacious knife, an onion with a flacious knife, if he wanted to use that onion on a cream cheese sandwich or something, what does he need to do? He takes a pottery knife, cuts, he measures the Kedeni Tila, 2 centimeters, uses the thickness of your thumb, whatever it is, measure over 2 centimeters, cut one side, the other side, 2 centimeters, cuts up the other side. Those 2 pieces that he just cut off, he can put in the refrigerator in a bag, clearly labeled meat, because those sections of the onion are now as fully considered meat, not even meat equipment, they're just meaty, as if they were cooked with, meat in a meat frying pan or something. And then the rest of the onions, the 2 edges of the onion, he can use, they're considered hard, they are hard, he can put on his cream cheese sandwich. That's for Sephardim, that's the Mechaber.
Is that right?
Give yourself a little bit extra space, I guess. But then
within the space,
you're not mixing. No, then you're going to be mixing in the middle.
So
you don't use something so no.
Would
you have made? I guess so. Would that central second become your level of budget? Oh, definitely going to become
a knife.
The knife would not be in the shot. The knife wouldn't be drawing in from the sides. The knife spits out taste. It doesn't really. We're going to talk about the knife absorbing taste, but let's assume for now that the knife doesn't really absorb taste. It just spits the taste out.
Alright?
You need kedeni tzivah on both sides of the cut. Meaning I cut an onion in half, so the right side of the onion needs kedeni tzivah, and the left side of the onion needs kedeni tzivah. Yeah.
Is it over 24 hours? Is that an issue at all? Or is it
the knife itself, we're going to talk about as machlokas Ashkenazim Sephardim. Classic. Okay, so that was for the Mechaber. The Mechaber says only Kedei Nesiva becomes Pleishik. Obviously, all this applies to Milchik also. It just depends on what type of Kedei you're using. But what do the Ashkenazim say? So the Ramah, as Kedarka Bakodesh, as he does often, he gives us a Lichas Chila and a Bidi Eved. We saw for the Ramah, we also had a Lichas Chila, Bidi Eved, with Nat Bar Nat. So he does this all the time, wants to be associated for some of the more Machmir Shitos, but in the end, he's willing to admit what the actual like baseline halacha is. Lichas Chila, the Ramah Paskin's Kulo, the entire vegetable, the entire radish, onion, ginger, whatever it is that you're cutting, becomes Fleishik, in our example. But Bidi Eved, we would consider only Kedei Nesiva. So it would be only the day to steal. So that means that if I already cooked, let's say I already took this onion and put it into a, I don't know what dairy, quiche, right? You use onions and quiche. So let's say I already cooked this onion into a dairy quiche, and we want to know, is everything trade, or is the quiche trade, or are my pots trade, what's the deal? So we're going to be measuring based on bissel b'shishim. The amount that you need to be in the batel in order for things to remain kosher is just the kedei netila as opposed to the entire onion. Right, so you have to be able to say how much of the onion was kedei netila. I can say 3 ounces worth of onion or whatever it was, and then we'll be measuring that against the rest of the contents of the pot, and we'll see, did you have shishim or not?
Even though it's in the
beginning,
it's still a
chumra, because you still need to have a shishim. Oh, 100%, yeah. Meaning, instead of looking at the entire thing in place, we'll only look at the kedei netila.
It means that then you use the rest of it, Not the
2 centimeters
where the kedei netila, but the rest of it, and you put it in your quiche. Did you
still
then
need about the shishim or no? You did that on purpose, or you did that, you only realized
that
effect? Meaning
you just didn't know that the
whole thing
becomes
fleshy.
You thought that it's enough to...
No. So let me explain what I mean. What do we mean by l'chasila? What do we mean by bidi eved? L'chasila means, I realize, I cut the onion and I realized right there, oh my gosh, that was a fleshy knife. What's the deal? So right there, you need to look at both sides, the entire onion, as fleshy. So when you're deciding, can I make my quiche, can I not make my quiche, you need to be looking at the entire onion as fleshy. The entire thing needs to go in the refrigerator, labeled meat, and pull out a new onion, start again. Bidi eved.
That may be an issue in general, preserving onion.
Okay, fine. Different discussion. Good. If I already put the onion into the quiche, and only then I realize, wait a minute, I think I used my fleishik knife, let me go check. Yeah, taka with a fleishik knife. Only then you realize it's already cooked into the quiche. That's what we're talking about bidi eved, and it's only really relevant for questions of bittul.
Right, but and then you didn't actually just use a conditioning process. When you used the whole onion, and you cut it in half, and you use half for your thing right now, and whatever for your meat body, and now you have another half, which has this bit of the section of
you put the entire onion into the heat, both sides.
So why is it a question then of... then it's only a question of B2B shishim. It's not relevant to today's any far enough. Right.
Well, how much do you need to be about the mishishim? We're saying instead of saying the entire onion needs to be about the mishishim in order for it not to be choice. Today nitiwa, not today klipa, a little bit more. Today nitiwa needs to be about the mishishim in order for things not to become choice. Good. Obviously, what happens if you take your knife and like you just chop the onion into a bunch of rings? How much does it become kosher? It's kedei nitiwa of every single cut. That's the problem. If you chop up your onion, you cut it into dicing. If you dice your onion, then every single little chop is going to be fully kosher, even according to the, even both part of Manash 9, have to treat every single individual piece as kosher because they each came in contact basically with the knife blade. Yeah.
So you get like a branch that, for instance, the
entire
thing becomes
kosher,
then you put it
like
the
sheep aside,
then...
You put it in the
sheep, I don't want to think of it as a sheep. Just the big hand that they have.
You shouldn't do that on purpose. You never really are without that all this. You shouldn't on purpose. If you actually did that.
Even
if
it wasn't
you
still
be fine, yeah. But you really shouldn't be once you realize that this is a flacious radish, you should not be putting it on purpose to create pickle. You should never avoid create pickle on purpose. What I need to figure out is how much of the onion am I trying to be mid-vatel in the larger quiche? So instead of saying I need to be mid-vatel the entire onion, which could be like 6 ounces, today there's the other thing. If you guys only look at today's kilo versus the smaller amount of two sides,
I imagine.
You only cut it once. You cut it once down the middle, let's say. So now 2 centimeters on each side.
You dice it up.
Okay, if you dice it, then you have a different problem. Let's say soup's rather better for you, right? Soup's rather better for you. You cut it once down the middle, so 2 centimeters on either side is going to be... You may still need to take out the onion. If that happens to you, I'm not positive. Call your rabbi and ask. You may still need to take out the onion. I think that was a machlok yet, so you should double check.
Okay, so b'zi'evet depends on how much of the onion is in the quiche, right?
B'zi'evet meaning it's already happened, you've already put them together. Right. Your question is going to be, can I be mevatel the tadei nitiwa in the rest of the thing, as opposed to having to say, am I able to be mevatel the entire onion in the quiche? That make sense?
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason it's giving you a little bit of a cooler, it's because you have much less you need to be mevatel in order for things to remain.
Meaning it's like every bite is onion and it's vegan, right?
Every bite is onion.
Like meaning like it's all over the place.
Is it tasted not buffalo, you're saying? Tasting that buffalo, you may have a problem.
Maybe tasting the buffalo, you're not going to taste the meat.
The onion itself. So you may potentially have an issue. You probably don't. It really depends on sizes. Because we're saying the onion itself is probably fine. It's only the potato of the onion. So the fact that you're eating onion isn't specifically an issue. You're wondering, am I eating onion that has meat taste absorbed? So that's the question. Okay.
Just going back, is there a reason why the pressure of the taste is enough to transmit the bottom line is?
Is there a logic behind it? It's a good question. I think we usually assume, on the one hand, pressure creates heat. We usually not a significant amount of heat. The pressure does create heat. And it may just be the interaction between the two sides. I don't know. I'm not positive that the cutting action of the blade may even be the cutting action of the blade against the cutting board is creating enough friction to cause the interaction. Maybe the taste going in, going out, maybe the taste going out. Yeah. It's called Duchka de Sakina. Okay, so this is a fantastic question. So this is a sample of Ben-Ar's test question, and you have to look for the chaf in there also. So, somebody is... Well?
Ben-Arosh.
Ruth Bednarz, who's I learned about the Rav Bednarz last year. This is one of his like sample test questions with like a little connection there, you have to catch it. So you have a guy who's making a cream cheese sandwich. Right? So he spreads on the cream cheese, pulls an onion out of his fridge, and cuts it, puts the onion, cuts off the piece, puts a slice of onion on top of the sandwich, and then he realizes, wait a minute, I used a meat knife to cut the onion. What should he do?
I guess I'm supposed to take out the bit of onion and put that in the face and clean it off.
Okay.
And while you take off a kibbeh klipa of the cream cheese.
So not, definitely not kibbeh klipa.
Why not the cream cheese? It was organic.
Well, so what was the interaction between the... Was there a real interaction between the...
Interaction.
They touched each other, but there was no taste transfer, right? There's no dukkha. There's no dukkha, right? There's no pressure from anything. There's no heat. There's no
heat.
No. Even if you did, you probably should be okay. Oh, very nice. So since there was no interaction, there's just touching, we assume that the onion, the cream cheese is basically fine. It's going into the cream cheese.
Really?
Yeah.
Even though the cream cheese is fine, the cream cheese did get an onion flavor, so I guess the cream cheese...
Maybe. What if the entire time eating
it, I'm just tasting hybrid? You're eating your cream
cheese? Yeah, and I'm like, cream cheese, and like, I think what I get on it.
That's
like, I think it's very strong
flavor. I'm not sure. I don't know if you can taste any cream cheese. I don't know. That's a good question. What happens
if I cut... It depends how long the onions are for. I mean, like, if you, like, make a sandwich and, like, pack it up for work, and it's like...
Yeah, for a while.
And
then
you're
going to
taste the onion.
Yeah, but that's for sure
you're
going to take
a
because then there's pressure.
Right
on top.
But isn't that probably not considered significant pressure? That would cause absorption. Even that would not cause absorption.
I'm not sure.
Exactly. So that's right. If you take off that piece of onion, that's for sure. What happens if I cut the top of an onion with a meat knife and then use a part of the knife to cut from the bottom of the onion and put a slice from the bottom on the cream cheese and lox sandwich? Meaning it's not just cream cheese and lox, then I put this slice of onion from the bottom of the onion on. Do I need to take it off? Can I eat it? What's the deal?
Well, again, this is seen according to the Ramban. You don't need to take it off, because the whole onion gets absorbed. But the oven is fine.
Okay.
The only person I'll be able to eat it is as far as you can't eat cream cheese and lox.
Beautiful, that's the top right there. That's the top. The question you should be asking is, well, friends, is it Ashkenazi or Sephardi? Is it Mechaber or is it Ram? But as Elijah just told us, we're clearly dealing with an Ashkenazi because it's fish and milk, it's fish and chips, fish and cream cheese. So once you know that we're dealing with an Ashkenazi, the psak is lechatchila, you need to take it off, and since you can easily pull off the onion, it's considered lechatchila. You should definitely peel off that piece of onion and toss it, throw it away. Very good. Great pickup, great hop, that was it. Ben Arsh happens to like those types of like choppy questions. You have to like really think hard about what's going on in the question, what's the scenario, what kind of guy are you dealing with, and then you can give the psak based on that. It was very, very, very sharp. Okay.
So for an Ashkenazi in that case, you need to...
That would be considered lechachila because they haven't actually been mixed. You haven't actually cooked them together, so you should pull off the piece of onion. It seems like you should be able to eat the sandwich without a problem. You don't assume there are problems of like the onion taste having gotten absorbed, but I would want to double check that first. Okay.
And we're saying as far as we eat fish and whatever.
Then you'd be okay. Assuming the bottom is more than a kidney kilo from the top, then you'd be totally fine. You can leave that slice on there, and you can enjoy your
slice. And what do you need to take off? Kidney kilo, or just take off the onion?
No, for the Sephardi. If the Sephardi happens to somehow eat fish and cheese, then he doesn't have to do anything. That piece of onion from the bottom, assuming it's more than kidney kilo, is totally fine. Totally fine according to the Mechaber. Okay, so we said, lechatchila versus bidyevet, this is an interesting question. For a meat knife, you said, what should you do with that kidney nitzila that you're taking off, or the onion entirely if you're Ashkenazi? You should put it in a bag, mark it as meat, and presumably use it before night time, maybe not. So if it's already mixed, then we said kidney nitzila. If it's bidyevet, it's a bitzel question. We already spoke about that. What happens with a trace knife? All this stuff applies to a trace knife also. Rav Bednarz actually just said he has somebody texted him with a question from the Czech Republic, saying that he was the CTO of Home Lev's like technology department, and he was at a tech conference in the Czech Republic, and they had sliced up a bunch of onions and dropped them in the water. So what is the deal? Lemon is a better product. Lemon is a great spicy.
Onion.
My bad. Disgusting. Lemon is a better product. We assume lemons are devachar, they're actually discussed explicitly in the Shulchan Aruch. Lemons are devachar. So if they use trace knives to cut up these lemons and drop the lemons in the water, there's trace taste, which is being absorbed into the water. Can I drink this water or not? So what's the deal? What's the fact of the trace knife? What's the chaskila? What's the evidence? Let's say that I cut this lemon or I cut an onion with a trace knife and I realize it's right there. So what do I need to do with those two pieces? What do I need to do with these label traits? What am I doing with my trace label lemon? So what am I going to need to do?
Not drinking water.
What?
Not drinking water.
No, so this means even before I mix them with water, right? I, for some reason, have a, I have a trick knife in my house. Right, so what you're going to need to do is you're going to need to throw them out. Once I'm throwing something out, isn't that already considered b'dyeved? Right, the fact that I need to throw out these lemons, that means that there's a loss of money involved, there's a hefted, that should be called b'dyeved already. Once it's b'dyeved, then instead of saying the entire lemon became trait, only kedei b'tila should become trait. So is that a logic I'm able to use? Can I say that basically every single case of cutting something with a trade knife is automatically going to be considered b'dyeved as opposed to l'chasimah? Interesting question. And that would mean I can downgrade, instead of the entire lemon becoming trade, only the kedei netila on either side of the cut should become trade and the rest of it would be fine. So this is a machlokes between the Mitzvah Yaakov and the Shach. Rabbi Kivager brings down the Mitzvah Yaakov and says, anytime you can throw something out, automatically the b'dyeved, and therefore cutting with a trace knife is basically always a question of the b'dyeved, only kedei netila. The Shach says, really, you're making such a big deal about like one onion, about one lemon, you can't just throw it in the garbage because it has a little speck of trace on there. Just toss it and get out of your one, it's not the biggest deal. This seems to be a pretty Yisodos big machlokes. How much do you take into account the actual like technical value of what you're losing versus the idea that you are losing something? It's an interesting question. The Chokhmas Adam, who's one of the later...
Who did you figure the Minchas?
The Minchas Yaakov, Rabbi Yehuda Eger on the Shulchan Aruch, who's the Minchas Yaakov, versus the Shach, one of the main commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. So the Chokhmas Adam kind of walks the line in between and says, you have to know yourself. It really depends on your circumstances. If for some reason an onion is a big deal, and you're counting your pennies, you need to make sure that you can't really afford a loss of even just an onion, then yeah, for you to be the other, go ahead and take off the potato kilo, and the rest of the onion is fine, it's not trace. But if you're able to go to the grocery store and splurge on like a shoka bitsaki, you can probably also afford to throw out this onion, and that's what you should do. For a person like that, you should toss the onion. It's not really considered a hefted, it's not considered a b'dyeved, and that would be fine.
What's wrong with water?
Technically, it might be absorbing trace taste from the lemon.
If you had onion on a sandwich, it's fine.
There's a lot more interaction between the lemon and the water than there is between the slice of onion and the cream cheese.
The water coming out of the thing doesn't have lemon in it.
It has a little lemon.
It's just the most interaction between.
In general, you assume two solids don't really interact with each other unless there's some sort of liquid or heat, some sort of medium which is aligned with
the liquid.
No, the fact that it's soaking in liquid means that there's definitely some interaction. You know that much, you can see, you can taste, but there is a little bit of water in the water. I have a question I'd like to check.
Hang on. According to, like, there are some people who go to, like, to the trade restaurant to get, like, salad or fruit, and maybe check or something, or just, like, breakfast, or, like, non-dairy, like, not meat, this is completely bogus, because they're still cutting up trade knives. Almost any of the things that they'd be ordering, whether it's salad, or breakfast, or fruit.
Restaurants are very difficult. The place where you may have a little bit of wiggle room, which is interesting, is fruit counters at a supermarket. Fruit counters at a supermarket may be different. We're going to try to get there. Not like gourmet lot. We're dealing with like some random supermarket. That's getting discussed a lot more now. You have a lot of issues there. It's not as clear as like, oh, it's all organic, so it's fine.
What issues would be there?
There's a whole list. I forgot about listening to the whole list of stuff. a lot of additives that they're using need like real shuffles, meaning like where are these additives, powders, different things, where are they coming from? Depends on like the, I guess, the level of veganism or whatever it is, but if they're using processed animal products or they're using bugs and things like that, which are technically not a problem inside like veganism, inside the vegan field, but for halakha it's definitely problematic. Bugs are always going to be a problem. How much are they checking? Are they checking according to the standard of halakha and stuff or not?
Let's assume they don't get it.
Knives is not going to be your issue. It's more about like things going on in the food itself.
Depends on the vegetables. They're greenhouse grown, you know, checking for bugs.
Okay,
right.
Essentially. It's not, bugs are not the only issue with vegan restaurants. There are things going on there. I think something on YU Torah, maybe Ryan Leibowitz, has a series going through like all the issues with non-certified vegan restaurants. You can find some.
It's like a
real value. It's a huge, huge question. Big machlokas. Really like in the 1950s or something. A lot of people spoke about it before and a little bit after. A lot of people duked it out. There was Moshe had a shita, there was Ryan Kohler had a shita. A lot of people talk about it. That's not so clear, but one shita does say that once something has been processed beyond the point of recognition, then it loses whatever status it has. We generally don't accept that. From trade sources?
Yeah.
Gummies talked about a lot. Yeah, it's definitely a shita, but we use it in
America. Like a lot of people.
I mean, not
down in America.
The most hashgachos in the reliable hashgachos in America do not rely on that shita. The non-rabbinic, the non-mahadran ones here in Israel used to. I think that's been changing. I think Rabbeinu said that's been changing. But the non-mahadran hashgachos here in Israel apparently did rely on that more maple shita. The reason it was such an issue back in the day was because they were only really making gelatin, or at least cheap, good quality gelatin was only coming from non-kosher sources. And it was very, very difficult, very expensive to get kosher sourced gelatin. And the plant-based gelatin was just low quality. So it was much more of an issue. There was much more reason to accept that cool up because like otherwise so many products are basically off limits. It's just impossible to marshmallow.
Yep.
Unless they accepted the cool up or paid an exorbitant amount of money. Now they number one, sourcing gelatin and kosher animals has become much more prevalent, much more common, a lot more kosher companies around, and they've upped their game on the plant-based ones. So much less reason to have to accept that kula, and I think the non-Mahadran Ashkafas here in Israel have been like adapting to that new reality. That's a different discussion though. What?
According to the way that we like weave our way around the question in regards to the sandwich.
Yeah.
We can say that, like literally if you don't notice it's chewing gum, it doesn't taste like fake gelatin. You know.
Right, but that's the only reason that's been processed to the point where it's no longer Nika.
Correct.
There's no real processing going on here. It's a taste which we assume.
What I'm saying is, like, we say that we may face an issue if the taste of the onion is absorbed into the sandwich, cream cheese, whatever it is, but the gum is like completely not noticeable.
But they're adding it. On the one hand, you're right. On the other hand, they are adding it to do something with the gum. It's called the Dabar HaMamid, which may create extra problems. Okay, so we just ended up with that Chachmas Adam. Depends on your circumstances, and the Ebdur HaFila really depends on if you can have the laws or not. There's really a lot that we want to talk about. We're probably going to have a part two. Definitely going to have a part two. Okay, I'm going to skip to the controversial part because I promised that we would get there. I just want to mention that there is a huge, huge machloket about Einu Ben Yomo. This is another Ashkenazi Sephardi issue. If the knife is Einu Ben Yomo, if the knife is Einu Ben Yomo, meaning the last time it was used was more than 24 hours ago, past meat, does any of this still apply? Is any of this still relevant? Or do we say, no, Einu Ben Yomo, tam becomes pagum, the tam is no longer a positive taste, and therefore we can ignore, there are no problems. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Einu Ben Yomo is not a problem. We're not going into that right now. Be aware of that. It's important to be aware, we'll talk about that next week. But Ashkenazim think that Einu Ben Yomo is still a problem. The sharpness of Dabar Charif rehabilitates the tam, even for and even with an Einu Ben Yomo knife, and therefore the onion will still have a full-fledged meat taste. Sephardim say no, once it's Einu Ben Yomo, you're totally fine, none of this applies. Okay, we'll talk about that more in detail next week, but I just wanted to mention that. Now, the Shulchan Aruch, when he opens up the Simen, Simen Tani Vav, and Yerideya, he says if you cut a radish into the Chayrif with a meat knife, it can't be used with dairy unless either you take off any tila, that we spoke about, or you taste it and see if there's a meat taste. I mentioned this last week. This whole idea of tasting, we spoke about with a non-Jewish chef. If you have a mixture of trace taste, milk and meat got put together, and you want to know, is there really a taste of trace in there, you, according to the Shulchan Aruch, according to the Gemara, you could go to your next-door neighbor, your non-Jewish neighbor, and say, hey, can you please taste this for me? He'll taste it. It tastes delicious. Do you taste any milk in there? No, I only taste taco. Okay, great. Thank you very much. You can go home and take a bite. We spoke about this last week. We generally don't rely on that. We went into that last week. It's a very similar idea here. A Jew can taste the onion and think to himself, do I maybe give it to a friend? There's not no gap, whatever. Do I taste onion? Do I taste meat in this, or do I not taste meat in this? I cut it with a meat knife. Do I taste the meat? Do I not taste the meat? If he did, then it would be meaty. If he did not, it would be totally fine.
Oh.
1 second. You just want to make sure you get through this? Ask me after, right? So, we already said last time we generally don't rely on taste. It was a machlokas acharonim as to whether that's only true for the goyim, because like, we don't necessarily want to rely on goyim right nowadays, or it was because our taste buds would become less sensitive. It's shach versus the levush. We do possibly like the shach, we said it was really just goyim, but it's only going to be relevant to the other. We don't really, it basically never really happens nowadays. That's not something you can do. You can't just take a bite of the onion and say, hey, I don't taste any meat. We're totally fine. However, the huge controversy which she came out 2 weeks ago from Rav Melamed, Rav Melamed's new sefer, Pnimei Halacha and Kashrus Bet, talks about the following idea. He's been talking about this apparently for a couple of years, but it just made it into Pnimei Halacha for the first time, which means like he's really caught in this way, and it's really wild, it's really shocking. Don't really have time. Oh man. Okay, fine, I'll say that. Maybe we'll come back to it next week. Now that we have soap and running water, hot running water in our houses, none of these things are relevant anymore. It says that scientifically, if you took a microscope and looked at a pot and looked at food bouillon, you would see that, let's take a metal pot, the food particles are too large to actually like get absorbed into a metal pot, which is not possible scientifically. So when we're talking about bouillon, we're talking about things getting absorbed, taste getting absorbed. What must we have meant? We must have meant that there's a thin coating of like lime, oil, or something that's left on the side of the pot, even if you did like a cursory job of wiping it down. So when they didn't have soap, which wasn't so long ago, about 200 years ago, was when they really like formalized the process of making good soap. They had ash, they had coal, they had other ways to kind of do it, but real industrial style good soap was about 200 years ago, 150 years ago. So before they had soap, you would have this layer of grime around the side of the pot, and that's what we need when we talk about bleach. That's the taste which is getting absorbed into our food. Talked about by Hester Taylor. If you put a pot into, you put a bunch of pots into like a big boiling cauldron for Hester Taylor, over a certain amount of time, the water is going to become like grimy and thick and soupy. It becomes gross and disgusting. That definitely does not happen nowadays. Presumably it's because the pots that they used to be putting in had this layer of grime which would come out into the water, and the more that you did over time, that grime would just build up and become thick and soupy. That definitely doesn't happen anymore. Rav Melamed is saying that Matthias has changed. We don't have that grime in our pots anymore. There's nothing to give over taste. Once there's nothing to give over taste, that's true with my knife, that's true with my pot. So that means, even a davar charif, if I take my knife and cut a davar charif, I cut the onion, there's nothing there to become absorbed. That onion is just as hard as it was when it started. Throw the davar charif out the window. Not those words. That's basically what he's saying. Davar charif is no longer shy. It doesn't happen anymore. Unless you know that my knife was still dirty. If you know that my pot was still dirty, and I saw that there was still grease or grime on the pot, then obviously all this would still apply, but not so relevant nowadays. We usually do a pretty good job cleaning on Galen. This is a Galanic huge fetish. The Benner says there's no way that he would be comfortable relying on that. Even as a Bidiyabed, even as a Hepsidy, we're not relying on that. He says I'm too conservative, lowercase d, I'm too conservative, I wouldn't be able to go against hundreds of years of Sakalava just because of what we assume to be the Matthias. But he said Ramalamed, his director, that we need to be scientific men, we need to have our eyes open to the reality. That Rabinovich, who's also the Rosh Yeshiva of Malayat Min, said Rosh Lema, also had the same director, had the same approach. He apparently agreed. Now this is all written up in I don't know if he's given that stack as publicly as Ramalamed, but apparently he agreed. This is all written up in a couple of Chumen articles, one of the Israeli Halacha periodical journals/Sfarim. So Rabbenar said he would never pass in that way, but that sheikh is out there, that's where Muhammad. Apparently a Gruss guy told me, and I one of the other guys in Gruss, that they were speaking to Rav Schechter about this. And Rav Schechter really said something very similar. Like, we know, we have equipment, we have science tells us, that there are no glios, that there's no space to throw into the walls of a pot. There's nothing left on the outside when you clean it well with soap and hot water. What are we making this whole issue about? So Rav Schechter explains, like, half the Jewish world, unfortunately, is not gory science. They're like, it's a Zionist plot, or it's a plot of the guy, and like, science doesn't really exist. So if we started relying on this, not really hesitant, if we said, the theist has changed, it's new reality, and our pots are clean, we don't need to negotiate Shita Rosharis, it affects not Barnat, he has a Shita Barnat Barnat because of this in there. If we changed our practice and reflect that, then half the Jewish world, the entire, like, not the entire Haredi, the Haredi, the sections of those populations would no longer be able to eat in our houses. They would say that we're eating trade each time we have a piece of children to soup or whatever it is, anytime we're eating something from Zabar Sarif or not Barnat, anything like that, they would see us as being straight. We're not looking to divide the Jewish world. We're not looking to separate ourselves in terms of our day-to-day halachic practice from the rest of the Jewish world, so we're not going to actually align on this halachic mitzvah. But he said, Azarif Emes, be Karon, it seems like this is actually correct, that this idea that Malam is speaking out is really MS, it's factually correct, but in terms of day-to-day practice, we're not going to rely on it as a shita. Very interesting, pretty controversial. At least my rabbis say that we're not going to rely on this, definitely for now. This is not the normal derech of Pesach. We will still be using the rules of Zabar Charif. We have a lot more to talk about next week. But, I promise, controversy, it's very interesting, very, very recent. It really just came out now a couple of weeks ago, and everyone's talking about it. So I thought you guys should be aware. Shkoyach.